Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Jim.
There have been times in my life I've been wondering why.
June 15th in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Still somehow I believe you always survive.
I said June 15th in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah, I heard you.
I was listening.
The you're serious still, about this. I am serious,
you're serious about
it.
This.
I've never seen Kenny Loggins in concert. I'm thinking road trip, but you two wimps.
It's Father's Day weekend.
Well, not
do you
only...
really like your father?
Yes, actually, I
he
do.
Actually
my,
does.
My dad's great.
Oh. Not only is it Father's Day weekend, so I would feel guilty going out of town, but I also... this week.
Craig would want you to be happy.
I know he would. We have gone in with someone to make sure the girls can go to their concert of the year, which also happens to be in June. And so we pulled that trigger yesterday.
What concert is that?
That would be Billie Eilish at the Independence
Center. Oh my God, if I hear one more thing about
Center.
Billie Eilish, I'm going to lose my mind.
And it's my daughter's birthday around that time. And, you know, sometimes you just have to do mm-hmm. what will make the children happy. And then they need a chaperone. So I've got to go.
I don't think they do. How old are they?
Do you know how many moms were like, I'll chaperone. No, me. No, I'll chaperone. We're fighting over who gets
I
to go.
I would gladly let you chaperone the kids on that. Ugh.
It's going to be a good time. So we did. We found some seats, and so there goes my concert budget for that.
Okay. June 15th, Tulsa.
It's good. It's all good.
Okay. Maybe I'll just go down there with Kelly and mind my own business.
How are you, Will Starrett?
I am fantastic.
Keyword to cash, by the way, is proud, P-R-O-U-D, proud, 72881.
I have a question for Will Starrett.
Fire when ready.
How old are you again?
I'm about to be 36.
Good. What is there, and you can text us at 22980, at your age that you do not know how to do or do well, that you are embarrassed to admit you do not know how to do?
Shuffle a deck of cards.
Oh!
I cannot shuffle a deck of cards. Every time I try, they just go everywhere.
That's a good one. And man, you came up with that really quickly.
Really good self-deprecating humor there would have been read the news.
I'm working on this. This is what, my second day in this chair?
He's really good at that. So shuffling a deck of cards.
I know he's. That's why he would be self-deprecating.
Yeah, I can't shuffle a deck of cards at all, which is really embarrassing because two of my grandparents played bridge practically till the day they died.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I can't shuffle a deck of cards at all.
You have big hands, too, so you should be able to do all of the...
In theory, yeah. The casino tricks. Yeah.
Yeah. Scott, what is your... You don't know how to do, and you are embarrassed to say at your age you do not know how to do this thing.
Hook up my credit card to my iTunes account.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah. It has, two credit cards prior still in there.
Okay.
And I don't know how to change it.
I could help you do that.
Okay.
I actually know how to do that.
I haven't bought a new song in probably 2 years.
But you still have Key Largo, right?
Of course.
Okay,
of course. Please.
Your late night drunken investment.
Yeah. But I don't think I've bought a new song on iTunes in 2 years, and I want to, but I'm afraid to ask anybody to teach me how to hook up a new credit card to my iTunes account.
Right. Well, as long as your children aren't in your cloud, you're fine. A lot of us have made that mistake, and then you get some crazy bill, and you're like, wait a minute, what?
What about you?
So I have two. I share one with, I think, a lot of millennials, and Jason just nodded as well. I could learn how to do this, but I do not know how because I've never done it. I do not know how to change a tire. Never done it.
Oh, I don't do that. That's easy.
I know I have a spare. I know where it's located, but if something happened on a highway, I would not know how to...
You wouldn't know how to jack it up?
No. Those things scare me. No. Do not know how to change a tire. And then I learned this week that I am embarrassingly bad at starting a fire. I would be the world's worst arsonist if I chose that path. Because I went out back the night before last, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to build a fire. I took an entire New York Times, a lighter, and could not get that damn thing to go.
Did you try using wood?
Yeah, had the wood. Had the wood stacked.
Did you have lighter fluid?
That's the key right there, Will Starrett.
That is cheating, Will Starrett.
It's cheating, but I also feel like that's training wheels. If you don't know how to start a fire, you can use that kind of to get...
If you have to use lighter fluid...
I'm telling you, Scott, I tried and tried.
We've a bunch of news...
And I'm like, why is... The biggest
mistake...
Was
the wood dry?
Maybe not.
Oh, wow. I wonder if that's why it wouldn't start.
Maybe that's what it was. I'm like, why is this so hard? Biggest mistake I ever made was not putting a gas starter on that thing outside.
No, I think the biggest mistake you ever made was using wet wood.
Now I feel better.
The wood has to be dry or the fire will not start.
I was actually joking about this on Facebook. And
Oh, my God.
Someone wrote and said, I always questioned how someone's careless spark could start a forest fire.
Oh my God.
Forest, and I too cannot build a fire.
When it's that dry, anything is possible.
Oh my God.
And when the wood is that wet, no fire is possible.
Well, it didn't look wet. And Scott, for the record, I'm trying to be honest here, and I did not make fun of you for not knowing how to delete a credit card in your cell phone.
Well, that's one thing, but not realizing you can't light wet wood on fire.
Well, I didn't realize the wood was wet. It didn't look wet, but it's been outside, so it's probably wet. That's my thing. I can't do it. That and geography.
So what did you try to do to get it to burn? Did you just try to directly light the wood? Because that's not
good. New York Times piece by... And the Sunday... Not any New York Times. The Sunday New York Times.
That's $6 right
there. It wouldn't go. And so finally, I was like, why didn't we put a gas starter out here? I went in, played the piano for a while, read a book, and went to bed. I'm just not good at it. You know what? And that's good because I could never, ever burn something down. So that's the positive.
Here, let me give you a little bit unsolicited advice.
Yes.
Okay. First of all, 2 days ago, it was 91 degrees. You shouldn't be lighting a fire in 91
degrees.
So nice
anyway. Outside.
You also might want to consider... Unsolicited advice, okay?
Okay.
Do you have a stack of wood at your house?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the leftover wood, but yes.
Okay. Maybe leave 3 or 4 pieces in the garage at any given moment.
That is brilliant.
Thank you.
From the text line, I am 38 years old. I don't know how to make a loaf of bread. I've just never had to do it.
I don't know how to make a loaf of bread either.
I can't either. I have friends who know how to do it, and they're brilliant at it, and I can't do it either.
Got a bread machine at home, so...
I couldn't make it with the bread machine.
Really?
Nope. Came out like a rock.
All you have to do is measure and dump it in there and hit the button. That's it.
Didn't work. Came out like a bowling ball.
You know, there's an interesting story. I think this is what kind of sparked Dana's question. There's a story in the Wall Street Journal on the front page. Hang on, Sarah. Don't leave yet. About this, and they always feature like it's always a little, there's always a fluff piece on the bottom of the front page of the Wall Street Journal about how your smartphone has led you to lie more about your ETA. Did you see this story?
I love it.
I heard about it. I didn't see it.
People will lie about their ETA. When are you going to get here? I'm on my way.
2 minutes. 2 minutes away.
As you're laying on the couch. Dana's very guilty of this. Very guilty. And I must confess, I have become a bit of an ETA liar myself. Like I'll say, I'll be there in 5 minutes. When I know hot damn and well, I'm 10 to 15 minutes out.
Why not just say we're 10 to 15 out Instead of 2 minutes, I'm almost there. Why not just say, look, I'm 10 minutes out.
Why don't you do it?
I'm working on it.
You've told me I'll be right there when you were 20 minutes away.
I'm working on it. My new therapist is an ADD specialist, and I love her more than you know, and we're going to have her on the show at some point because she's brilliant and funny and insightful. She says ADDers think you can get to downtown Kansas City in 10 minutes as the crow flies with no stoplights. That is a universal, nearly universal thing. And so she works with college kids about it. Here's what she has said to me, Scott. They see time differently. It's not good. It's not bad. They view time, all time, differently than the rest of us. And I'm not making excuses for anyone who's always late, but she said you have to train yourself and learn how to manage time in the way that those around you expect you to manage time.
But you're acting like you don't have either ADD or OCD because you have at least one of them.
I do. I have one of them badly. I have late onset ADD. And one of the things, but it's way down the list we're talking about, is time. Because we always try to shove stuff in that doesn't need to
but
be shoved in.
But you're always late.
Right. So if I am on my way to work, I will obsessively think, but I could stop at the post office.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really need to. Like, I've got to mail this thing, but it's not critical I mail it today. This
right.
happened.
Okay.
And she would say, you have to stop and think, is this a critical thing to do right now? In my mind, it feels good to check things off my list. So I am obsessive about shoving too many things
even
in.
Even if it means you're
going to
be late.
Even if it means I'm going to be late. And I do it all the time. And she said ADDers to a T will do that. So she said, you have to figure it out. And I did on my way into work today. I thought, you know what? I really want to go to the post office.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. And it's right there. You know it's right there.
It's right over here.
Because I think it'll take 2 minutes to run in there. Well, it doesn't. You know that. It takes 20 minutes
to run in
there.
It takes 2 minutes to get there.
Correct.
2 minutes to get back. So now you've doubled the time.
Yep.
And then you're going to be in line for 10.
So people who don't have a brain like I do don't think about things like that and don't do things like that. And I default to doing that. And so I'm working on thinking about time in a different way. But this New York Times study is, or Wall Street Journal is fascinating to me. Because I think most people who do that aren't doing it to be a jerk. They're not doing it to put you out. They're not doing it.
I think they're doing it so that they don't disappoint you. You're asking me, when are you going to be here? I'm on my way.
I'm coming.
Even though in the story that they highlight in the journal, the girl who wrote to her friend, I'm on my way, was actually still curling her hair. She wasn't leaving for another 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's flat out lying.
But we get it into our mind. I don't want to let Will stare it down. He's expecting me.
I'm coming.
I'm on my way. I am on my way.
From the text line, I am 52 years old. I cannot tie a tie.
Oh, I'll show you how. That's easy.
That's easy.
Double Windsor, no problem.
Exactly.
Okay, iTunes boy.
No problem.
Did that the other day.
Did you just call me iTunes boy? 576-7798. Why do we do it? I mean, there are two little OCD stories that we got here. Number one, what is the one thing you're embarrassed to admit you cannot do? Okay. And number two, why do we lie about when we're going to be somewhere we're expected to be? 576-7798. Jason Katz, Will Starrett, Dana Wright. I'm Scott Parks on KMBZ. See, with the whistling, there we go again. I met you on somebody's island. You thought you had known me before. I brought you a crate of fire. They waited all night by your door. What do you mean, what's the keyword this hour? Come on, man, you gotta pay attention. It's proud. P-R-O-U-D. Text that into 72881. We're gonna do Festivus Friday. Coming your way this afternoon at 5 o'clock, the airing of the grievances. Brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Let's just move on. We'll do a couple more here real quick. And
well, because there was a whopper on here. I am 30 years old. I cannot ride a bike.
Wow.
And I replied, no way did you grow up in a big city. Because I'm thinking if you grew up, you know, let's say you grew up in New York City as a child, the odds are probably not as good that you learned how to ride a bike.
Or even drive a car.
I mean, I remember my first bike was a banana seat bike. Do you remember those? I had a banana bike, like a weirdo, in Topeka, Kansas. And I rode that thing all over. No helmet, by the way. Don't do that, kids.
Oh, my God. If your parents make you wear a helmet, you're a nerd.
Like, I still... No. Not today. I still remember getting that bike. And then I remember getting an upgrade, probably the Kmart model. It was purple. And I rode bikes all the time, but we were also not near busy streets. We were on the north side of town where there was room to ride around. I think if you grew up in a big city, it's probably not that unusual. they wrote back, I fell off once with training wheels and said, screw it.
This one's interesting. Listen to this, and we'll get to the calls. 576-7798. This one doesn't surprise me. The other one will in a second. I'm 49 years old, and I still do not know how to swim. I'm also having a difficult time understanding college algebra, though. I returned to college at the age of 47. I think you would be surprised how many people don't know how to swim.
What do you mean by swim?
Not sink.
That's not swimming. That's treading water.
Well, staying alive. Like being able to do like the backstroke or...
Keep your head above water, right?
Well, that's just living.
Right. Because, Scott, yeah. I will tell you, and I have birthed swimmers. I have swimmers and divers. I am a terrible swimmer, but I can save myself. I can go out into the deep end of the pool.
I'm a great swimmer.
For 10 minutes and tread water. I can do that. I can lay on my back and splash around. But if you say to me, swim 20 laps, I cannot do that.
Well, I can't swim 20 laps either, but I'm 47 years old and fat.
But that's why I'm saying when you say I can't swim, that means a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
Well, like being able to go from one end of the pool to the other using one of the accepted strokes.
Right.
You know, like this one. What's this one called?
Freestyle.
Freestyle.
Free. Is that what it's called?
It's free.
What were you going to say it was?
I don't know. You're
talking
about
what we called it when I was a kid.
You're talking about, though, the over...
The normal.
Yeah,
the normal way to swim.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I was just kind of doggy paddle.
Or if you can, like, do the butterfly, or if you can...
Breaststroke.
Breaststroke, yep. My favorite, I'm not kidding you, this is so weird, is the side stroke. Oh, yeah, I do it frequently.
I don't think that's an actual stroke.
It looks like this. I'm not kidding you. It looks like this.
Okay.
And it is a stroke. No.
Looks like you're having a stroke.
The side stroke is a swimming stroke, so named because the swimmer lies on one side with asymmetric arm and leg motion.
Huh, weird.
It is
the
helpful
American
as
crawl.
It is helpful as a life-saving technique.
Thank you.
I mean, in competition, it is not a stroke.
You will probably not win using the side stroke.
Julie in Kansas City. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
So I'm calling to just kind of say what I noticed in people my own age, that they don't know north, south, east, west. You'll ask them, well, what corner of the building are you in? Oh, yeah. I'm on the side by the train tracks. I'm like, so you're in the northeast side of the building. Yeah, I don't know what that means.
My mother doesn't know that.
Isn't that crazy?
I literally, so, see, I'm really good. And Julie, I don't know if you're saying you're directionally challenged or other people.
No, by no means. I know my way around the city. I can say what way I'm heading, and I don't need to be behind the steering wheel or have my phone in front of me.
When I'm dealing with my mom and trying to give her direction somewhere, I will say, you know, then take I-35, go south. And then when you get to 95th Street, go east. And she goes, no. What direction do I need to turn?
Do I go left or right? Yeah.
And I go, well, if you're going east, you have to go left, Mom. She goes, okay, so I-35 south and then go left on 95th. She does not understand north, south, east, and west at all.
You just can't. It's either they get it or they don't.
Yep. All right, kiddo. Hey, right, good thanks, to hear bye. From you. All right, you take care.
And when she says you either get that or you don't, that is something you are born with. You are either born with a sense of direction or you are not. And I see it in my kids.
What direction is that?
Well, there's the Plaza East, North, South, East, North, South, South.
But are you sure?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
But I have to stop and do all of them and then turn around. And from North, I can tell you, I don't have whatever that is.
I do.
My daughter does. She'll go, "Where are you? Mom, left. Mom, left." I'm like, "How do you know where we're going?" She just knows where she is.
Mm-hmm.
I have another daughter that I said, "Honey.
A little bit like you.
I'm so sorry, but
a little bit.
You are all me.
Aww.
Just make sure your phone's charged."
Story here from the Kansas City Star. The controversy over racial equity in Lee's Summit erupted last night with school board members voting down a second attempt to get training for teachers and staff, and the superintendent saying he now wants out after the 4-3 vote that shot down a proposal to spend more than $97,000 to hire a St. Louis firm to train employees in racial equity, diversity, and inclusion. Superintendent Dennis Carpenter, who happens to be black, told board members to settle out his contract and find somebody this board can trust.
Oh.
Board members seemed stunned when a clearly frustrated Dennis Carpenter addressed them immediately after their vote. Quoting here from Carpenter, referring to a clause that requires the district buy him out if he is dismissed. "I want you all to fulfill my contract."
Wow.
Carpenter was hired from Hickman Mills in 2017. Quote, "I have sat with this district and tried to work with this district. I think if you don't have a leader you can trust, I think you need to find someone you can trust. Every piece I put forth in this district to try and assure equity is met with opposition. What this district needs to help move it forward is a superintendent it can trust." Parents in the audience shouted from the back of the packed boardroom, calling one board member a racist. Quoting here from LaShawn Walker, a parent, "What kind of message are they sending? What the hell is going on in Lee's Summit? Why do the teachers and district staff need racial equity training? What's going on? Is there a problem? Lee's Summit's not exactly a bad district."
This has been,
and I use "bad" in air quotes,
brewing for a while. And there are parents in the district who believe that they need this, and parents in the district who vehemently believe that they do not need this.
Is there something wrong in Lee's Summit?
I'm trying to remember what the catalyst. There was a catalyst because I remember some parents complained.
There was a study commissioned,
yes,
by the district, revealed that in nearly every measurable academic category, black students in Lee's Summit were being outperformed by white counterparts.
84 points below, and that was in 2015, 16, and 17, with a margin that is widening.
While black students accounted for 12% of the enrollment, they represented 36% of the suspensions. But parents and other residents spoke out at a school board meeting and on social media, complaining that the firm, $97,000, was too expensive and too set on discussing white privilege and the cultural competence of white teachers educating black children. So in other words, they thought $97,000 was too high and you were basically paying for a guilt session. You should be guilty or feel guilty and ashamed of yourself for being white. Am I wrong?
I think that there are people who view this as something that is not necessary. But if you look at the performance numbers, he's saying we need to address this.
But here's what I don't understand.
I don't understand why it's $97,000.
That's outrageous. The black students aren't being taught in separate classrooms, correct? We can assume that in 2019?
No. God, no.
Okay. So the black students are still being taught in the same classroom, correct?
Yes.
The answers that are right for a white student would be right for a black student, correct?
Yes, but there are so many factors that go into this, Scott. You know that.
So then what does it have to do with teaching racial equity to a teacher? You're teaching to the entire class, whether they're black
because
or they're white.
Because you've heard about systemic and institutional bias that you might not even know you have. I think that's what they're talking about. My thing isn't, do they need diversity training? Because I think that everybody should have diversity training. My thing is, does it need to cost $97,000? I mean, who the heck are they bringing in for diversity training?
But I have friends who are teachers, and certainly there is an educator very close to me in my family. Okay? Well, I cannot tell you how many times I've heard all of them complain that they're being held to a standard of which they have very little, and not very little, that's not fair, where they don't have the majority of the performance. My brother, who taught high school math in Wichita for 20 years before getting into administration, could not go home with his low-performing students. He couldn't say to the parents, my God, give a damn.
Right. I know.
Sit down with your son.
There are factors. Clearly, there are factors out of an educator's control.
Well, then maybe they don't need to spend $97,000 to talk to the teachers. Maybe they need to spend $97,000 to send a counselor home with some of these low-performing students and beat the parents upside the head and say, give a child.
That is not a viable option. I think that you know that.
I know it's not, but my point is you can't force people to care about their child's education.
Why are you so against diversity and bias training?
I am absolutely not. What I'm against is shooting at the wrong target. And that's what I think Lee Summit is doing. When a black student in Lee Summit doesn't perform to the same level of as a white student, you blame the teacher. You need to blame the parent. You're shooting at the wrong target. Your child can perform. Should we have problems when Asian students perform at a higher level than the white students? Nobody seems to be worried about that. But what's the argument about why Asian students perform at a much higher level? The parents are very involved. That's what everybody says. The parents are extremely involved. 576-7798. Jason Kitz, Dana Wright. I'm Scott Parks. KMZ. On the road again.
On the road again.
Oh.
Just can't wait to get on the road
Let's
again.
Go to my hometown.
The life I love is
Sue in Lansing. Hello, Sue.
Hey there.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on what I even had to pull over on the side of the road, Scott. I'm a teacher in Lansing, and this story is from many years ago. I lived in a duplex in Lansing, late 80s, early 90s, and a Vietnam refugee family moved in. He had been the mayor of Saigon. She had been a pharmacist, and now they got jobs as custodians at the VA. But their kids were little. Like, one was still in diapers, and two were, you know, kindergarten, first grade. And I watched those kids come home every night from school. And they played outside for about half hour, 45 minutes, and then it was study, study, study. They knew no English when they got there. They'd been in Thailand and in a refugee camp for years. And in the end, to cut to the chase, all three of those kids were valedictorians at Lansing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, you're right. Attitude with the family and the parents is everything.
You know, there was a study, and Sue, I've referenced this before on the show. There was a study done about 5 years ago that found, and I can't remember the exact number, but excuse me, I do know it was in double digits. You can increase the likelihood of your child performing better simply by asking them at dinner or at night when they come home, how was school and what did you learn? You can actually increase the way that they perform in school.
And make them tell you.
Simply by asking, what did you learn?
But
guess what I ask my kids every night?
But, Scott, you're ignoring the correlation between families who would sit down and ask that. If you're going to sit down and ask that, it's corollary. Because that already shows you are involved in your kid's life. You're sitting down at the dinner table. You're asking about their day, which probably means you are invested in their education, which it's a circle.
Which means you're actually a parent.
Well, but I think just to say that if you just say that, you're going to get that result is a little...
That's a fair point. But it goes back, Dana, if I may, to my argument before, we're shooting the wrong target here. Mm. We need to encourage, and I don't know how you can force, so the only thing you can do is encourage. We need to encourage people. I know this is a novel concept, but give a damn about your children.
But Scott, and this is from educationweek.org, teachers and their implicit biases can directly impact the opportunities afforded to students of color. They don't even realize it, Scott. Teachers make the first decisions about behavioral consequences that lead to referrals and suspensions. They serve as gatekeepers for gifted, honors, and advanced placement courses, deciding who to recommend for some of those tracks. That's why it's just important to step back and take a look at the way you work in your working environment. Are there biases in you causing you to make decisions that you don't even think about or understand the consequences of?
Okay.
I just don't know why it's $97,000.
Keyword this hour is agree, A-G-R-E-E, agree. Text that into 72881, agree, 72881. Let's get to the newsroom. Here is Will Starrett.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at kmbz.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.